All of those who previously attained Buddhahood, whether it was in India, in Tibet, they were no different than ourselves. There's no reason that we can't duplicate their feat, their accomplishment. We are exactly the same. We have exactly the same potential as they did. There's no difference. So it says as if, you know, the difference would be by way of analogy that if we had a seed, we had two seeds. We put one seed was in the field, and with this, we supplied water, fertilizer, and another seed was in a box, and that in this box, there's no possibility for it to come in contact with the necessary conditions. But the seed in the field, it comes in contact with the necessary conditions. No matter how, though they both have the exact same potential, but the seed in the box, no matter if it's there for hundreds of years, it will never activate its potential. But that seed out in the field will activate its potential and can develop quickly, even in just a few days, it can flower. We as humans have this great potential within us, that we have this seed within us, and we have to provide the necessary conditions to begin to activate this potential within us, and this is done through the process of hearing, reflecting, and meditating. That we have to provide the complete conditions, just like the providing the conditions for a seed in order to grow the fruit, the result that you're seeking. Likewise, we have to begin to eliminate all the conflicting conditions and begin to gather together all the conducive conditions. It is in dependence upon this process that we can begin to activate and realize the potential of this seed.
Ketina was Machia and Bayamas. Key. On Chino. Shimmy.
You know, if in fact we were to throw away this opportunity which we all presently have, if we were not to listen to the teachings, to begin to reflect, to meditate, to cultivate the qualities of compassion, love, awakening heart, begin to try to understand emptiness, it's not too long before we're going to die, that we don't have that ability to stay as long as we might like. We're going to die. And the same as a dog, a cat. A cat is going to die. And we will die no differently than this cat. That we would have had this opportunity, this great potential, but it would have the chance to cultivate it would have been lost. That we die not having developed any of our potential in our spiritual practice, developing any type of real love, real compassion. Nothing has been gained. So, you know, we look at the situation of a dog and cat having died, and they during the course of their existence, they had not even created the smallest skillful action during the course of their life. That they were, you know, they were involved in all the negative states such as anger, attachment, and involved in a great deal of killing, and that in such a situation, having done no skillful actions, but in fact having created many preponderance of unskillful actions, then the situation can only worsen. It cannot improve. That there's no possibility in the future for any type of a human existence, any type of existence where they'll be able to have the opportunity to practice a spiritual path. So this is a wonderful opportunity that we presently have, this attainment of a human existence, that we should make use of it. We should begin to cherish sentient beings, that we should begin to cultivate other centeredness, that we have to begin to develop compassion, love toward other sentient beings, to cultivate this, to practice these qualities. And so it's a very great time to make use of hearing and make use of meditation, to gather all the conducive conditions together, to make at this auspicious time to make a greater effort as possible.
Oh, the
You know, today we've been talking about the great benefits of compassion, its wonderful qualities, that it's the positive potential involved in its cultivation, that all of the marvelous qualities arise in dependence upon it. You know, without developing an awakening heart, there's no. Without love and compassion, we cannot develop an awakening heart, and without sentient beings, we cannot develop love and compassion. Therefore, these all arise in dependence upon, all of these wonderful qualities arise in dependence upon sentient beings. So even once having become a bodhisattva, we have to practice, and the practices of a bodhisattva entail the four means of amassing disciples and practice of the six perfections, and these two practices are dependent upon sentient beings. So amongst the six perfections, taking the practice of generosity, the perfection of generosity as an example, if there were no sentient beings, there would be no place for us to practice generosity. For example, if there were no poor people, then there would be no one to give to. We couldn't give food, we couldn't give clothing, we couldn't give dharma, we couldn't give love. There would be no sight, no place for us to practice generosity. So the practice of the perfection of generosity is dependent upon sentient beings. And again, within the six perfections, the perfection of ethics and its practice relies upon sentient beings. And why is that? The practice of ethics is the factor of abandoning harming others. And what is it that we abandon harming? We abandon harming sentient beings. Without sentient beings, there would be nothing that we could abandon the harming of. And therefore, the practice of ethics is reliant upon sentient beings. Again, the third perfection, the perfection of patience, which involves the cultivation of tolerance with respect to the harm brought to oneself by others. Without harm being brought to oneself by others, then we would not be able to develop the perfection of patience. And others is sentient beings. So we cultivate the third perfection, the perfection of patience, in reliance upon sentient beings. And then the fourth perfection, the perfection of effort, again, is reliant on sentient beings, because it is because the perfection of effort involves the striving for the sake of others' happiness and their elimination and the elimination of their suffering, and to benefit them. Without sentient beings, there would be no striving, making effort to eliminate happiness, to eliminate their suffering, to bring them happiness, and therefore there would be no perfection of effort. So again, the perfection of effort is developed in reliance upon sentient beings. Within the Buddha Dharma, there are the two vehicles of the lesser vehicle and the greater vehicle. Within the practitioner of the lesser vehicle sets aside the welfare of others and strives for one's own happiness and the elimination of one's own suffering. And it makes effort at these ends. But even though one makes effort toward these ends, in this type of effort can never lead to Buddhahood. One cannot attain Buddhahood. And then the fifth perfection, the perfection of meditative concentration, and this involves the meditation of the cultivation of calm abiding and special insight. And here we're cultivating these two for the welfare of sentient beings. In cultivating these two as for the welfare of sentient beings, then they become a method for the attainment of Buddhahood. The lesser vehicle practitioner also cultivates these two factors, but because he sets aside he's not meditating for the welfare of others, then it can never serve as a method for the attainment of Buddhahood. Then the sixth perfection, the perfection of wisdom, which involves the meditation on emptiness. But this is by the meditation on emptiness, but for the welfare of sentient, but for the welfare of sentient beings, that one is able to eliminate all faults and bring to fulfillment all positive qualities. But you know, we've described the practices of a bodhisattva, and the bodhisattva, you know, all of these practices are for the welfare of others. Between self and others, the bodhisattva is mainly making effort for others. And we might think, well, you know, if I set aside my own welfare and practice only for others, then I'm not going to get anything. If we were to actually act in such a way for the welfare of others, working for the welfare of others and bringing about their welfare, then our own welfare would be indirectly fulfilled. That we don't have to really make special concern for our welfare by striving to, for the sake of sentient beings, to eliminate their suffering, to bring them happiness, then our own happiness will be brought about indirectly. Our own suffering will be indirectly eliminated.
Nice. 아무도 야부지 쳐서나 근데 가랑 조금 영향 받아 봤어. 가랑 된다. 그래 지금 된다. 상상 그거 말했어. 아무도 야부 영향.
알았어.
아무도 야부 영향 부족 조금 야부 영향 자주 지내 기피 아 딱 배째나 못 보지는 아무도 야부지 쳐서나 근데 가랑 딱 조금 영향 받아 봤어. 이게 뭐가 그랬어. 그런 샤 가랑 딱 때 샤라 연구요.
Yes. So if we, to make an analogy, we take a family and, made up of a husband and wife and children. And if one of the members of the family, with the concern for the welfare of the family as a whole, the concern for the happiness of their family, goes to a great deal of effort, goes to a great deal of trouble, for example, works and provides money for the family, Their concern is, even though their concern is for the family, they themselves will be indirectly made happy through this concern. That by providing for the welfare of the family, their own welfare is indirectly brought about. So you don't need to worry that you won't get what you want in acting this way. So, if one were, you know, a member of a family, and one simply set aside the welfare of the family, and they were, you know, having difficulties, and one only concern was directed toward oneself, then this would be an extremely negative way of acting. So the Bodhisattva, in working for the welfare of others by engaging in the various practices of, for example, the six perfections, the perfection of generosity, ethics, patience, etc., indirectly brings about his or her own welfare by collecting the two accumulations of positive potential and wisdom. And in this way, that in acting in this way, that the welfare of others and one's own welfare are brought to fulfillment.
Off.
So we should, you know, reflect well upon the kindness of all sentient beings and begin to cherish them, to begin to care for them, and to not harm them, not fight with them, to cultivate the qualities of love and compassion toward them, that, and to meditate in this way, to seeking to benefit sentient beings. If we begin to enact the various practices of generosity and begin to show love for others, then we are going to benefit others. And in benefiting others, we are going to indirectly benefit ourselves. The Shantideva said, whatever happiness there is in this world, it comes about in cherishing others. And on the other hand, whatever suffering there is in the world comes about through cherishing only oneself. And because we want to be happy, we have to begin to abandon self-centeredness. And because we want to be happy, we have to begin to abandon self-centeredness and begin to cultivate other-centeredness. So we're almost out of time, but we'll spend about maybe 5 minutes if you have some questions.
Yes. How can we be sure that our motives are really pure in attempting to help others, or, you know, having a selfless attitude and so on, if the teachings imply that ultimately that will benefit us? You know, if we know that that is ultimately going to benefit us, how can we be sure that our motivation for developing selflessness
isn't
actually directed towards, you know, still cherishing ourselves, you know,
self-cherishing. Shin shin the pena, shula sosala pen, wrong the pen, right? Then you know, now that the mi shen the pen jedu, now that kunong, yao yabore na na mi de pen 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 na na shul na na la shul pen shul shul pen gre ne de de kulon ya po mare
de kulon ya po mare se de sano pa na ya po mare kol pa pa na ngal pen gre so de ne chen de de ya po chen mare se
ne kulon ya po yu me la
kol pa ran pen be so de ma tong che ro wa ran la pen be se no ma tong che kol pen ma
So this would be a mistaken way of relating to others, of trying to help others. If we were to have the motivation of that if I help this person, I'm going to be benefited, that this would be more than not the self-centered motivation, that this would be a mistaken motivation, that seeking to help others so that you can have happiness, that we should have the as our motivation the qualities of altruism, compassion, love, caring, and seeking, setting aside, not seeing that this is going to benefit yourself, but seeing concern with helping this person through due to the force of your love and compassion, seeing the benefit, wanting to benefit this person, and not considering how it's going to help yourself. So we have to examine whether our motivation is in any way mixed with an afflictive emotion, whether our motivation is mixed with attachment or hatred or delusion. Or on the other hand, is it a skillful state of mind? Is it an altruistic state? Is it caring? Is it loving? If we're motivated by these positive qualities, then this will be a skillful action. It would be a dharma action. If on the other hand, if it's mixed with the afflictive emotion, then this is this would be simply unskillful. But without knowing being able to distinguish between these positive and negative states, it is difficult to know one's motivation. Yes. If, for example, we were going to give something to someone, but we had the thought in mind that by giving I'm going to get some kind of resources in the future, then this would not be a perfect type of generosity. That it would be mixed with, motivated by self-centeredness, and therefore is definitely mixed with some afflictive emotion. If we could develop the attitude, the altruistic attitude of actually giving, practicing generosity, that I am giving for the welfare of the sentient being, that in order to attain perfect, complete Buddhahood, then I am going to I'm going to give this person, this needy person, this food or this clothing or whatever, with such a type of altruism, with such a type of beneficial mind, then this is would be a very skillful motivation. So the Bodhisattva in no way concerns himself for his own welfare. He's completely concerned about the welfare of others. That all of his actions are directed for the welfare of others. All his effort is made for the benefit of others, and it's unmixed with the thought of benefiting himself. There's no concern for his own welfare. But even though he's not concerned making effort for his own welfare, he will be indirectly benefited. Would it be what?
Would be right to think that the benefit would accrue in the next lifetime.
Yes.
If any benefit started
with... The mission that Rorom Jeto, Sachima ngala pengire, samatona, the kulang digirebe.
Did that come on dangerous?
Dingle. Yes. So this is a dharma practice, but it's a middling level of practice. So this is the practice of dharma, but it's not the motivation of the great vehicle.
Practice.
If our motivation was for this life, we gave something, hoping to get some kind of benefit in this life, then it does not qualify as a spiritual practice. The being of small capacity would engage in, for example, a practice of generosity in order to be benefited in a future life.
Shimala
Whereas the being of middling capacity, not wishing to stay within cyclic existence in any way, would practice generosity not for a future life, but in order to be liberated from cyclic existence. And the being of greatest capacity would practice generosity in order to attain Buddhahood. So if it is going to be a practice of the great vehicle, it must always be motivated by the awakening heart. If an action is not motivated by the awakening heart, it's not a practice of the great vehicle. Whereas if it is motivated by the awakening heart, even giving a piece of bread to a bird is a practice of the great vehicle. So in general, whether an action is a negative action or a positive, whether it's a spiritual practice, is dependent upon your motivation for the action. And within the spiritual motivations, there are the three levels of small, middling, and great.